Okay, this week's Pasha is Pasha Pinchas, and we begin on page 876. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, Pinchas the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron the Kohen, Heishivetz Chamasim al b'nei Yisrael, he turned back my anger from upon the Jewish people, B'kaneas k'nasi b'seicham, when he zealously avenged my honor in their midst, v'leichilisyas b'nei Yisrael b'kinasi, I did not destroy the Jewish people in my vengeance. V'chein emar, therefore say, hinini nois en lois prisi shalom, behold, I give him my covenant of peace. So, this week's parasha is continuing off to end of last week's parasha, where the Jewish people had become strayed after the Moabite women, and a plague broke out, and the prince of the tribe of Shimon, Zimri ben Salu, took a Midianite woman and publicly made it be known that he was going to cohabit with her. And while he did that, Pinchas came and took a spear and killed them both, fulfilling the halacha that Boyal Aramis, when he was cohabiting with a non-Jewish woman, Kanoyim Pregimboy. If you are a kanoi, if you are a zealot, that means that it truly, truly bothers you and angers you, the desecration of Hashem is that's going on there, you are allowed to kill that person. And now, Hashem declares that Pinchas ben Elazar took off my anger from the Jewish people when he was zealous. Because of that, I did not destroy the Jewish people, and therefore I give him my covenant of peace. So, it's a very interesting thought given by Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. On the Medrash that says here, where Hashem says, behold, I will give him my covenant of peace, the Medrash says, Bedinhu Shayitel Scharei. It is, the reward that he will be getting is Bedin. He rightfully deserves it. It's not like the reward here is some kind of special favor I'm giving him because of what he did. It's Bedin. He rightfully deserves this reward. And the question is, what exactly is the Medrash saying when it says he rightfully deserves this reward? So Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, it's brought down, explained it in the following way. Typically, when you give someone a medal or an award, the award is, or the award is called something that that describes the accomplishment that's being awarded. So let's say a soldier was brave in battle. So he gets a medal of courage, right? A medal of courage. He showed tremendous courage in what he did. And therefore, the medal is called the Medal of Courage for what he did. If, let's say, a person is getting an award for academic excellence, then the award is named as an award for academic excellence. The award is always going to symbolize the type of accomplishment that the award has been given for. So here, where Pinchas is being given a covenant of peace, it would make sense to say that if he is receiving a covenant of peace, he's getting the peace prize. That means what he accomplished was peace. But the Torah says, what did he accomplish? He accomplished Bekanes Kenasi. Pinchas' act was an act of zealotry, righteous zealotry. And therefore, if anything, he should get the zealotry award. Why is he getting the peace award? Again, you know, it seemingly the act that he did was not an act of peace. It was an act of violence, but it was a rightful act of violence. It was an act of zealotry, so he should get the zealotry award. Okay, why is he getting the Bris Yishalom? Why is he getting a peace award, a peace prize? And the answer really lies in the fact that the Pasuk says that he took off my anger when he was zealous, I didn't destroy the Jewish people, and therefore I'm giving my covenant of peace. The award is not for the zealotry. The award is for the fact that he took off my anger upon the Jewish people. The award is for the fact that this act of zealotry, or this act of what would be seen as an act of violence, is actually to be seen as an act of peace. Because he brought peace back to the Jewish people. When the Jewish people were sinning, and Zimri was supporting their sinful ways, Zimri was bringing destruction upon the Jewish people. because by causing the Jewish people to sin and by supporting their sin, the plague was going to continue. In essence, Zimri with his actions was bringing destruction upon the Jewish people. And when Pinchas in his zealousness killed Zimri, he actually took away destruction from the Jewish people and brought them back peace. And therefore, the way that we define Pinchas' act is not an act of righteous violence, but rather it's to be seen as an act of peace, because the Jewish people were experiencing spiritual destruction, physical destruction also, because of the sins that were being perpetrated. And by now being zealous and punishing the sinner, that now brought peace back to the Jewish people. So therefore, it is befitting. The award, the medal, the peace prize, he deserves the peace prize. Because we have to look at this act, although on the surface, this is an act of violence, but just because it's an act that you're acting out against someone, you're out at someone, you're even hurting someone, does not necessarily mean now that the act is defined as anything less than an act of peace, when what it's doing is removing destruction from upon the Jewish people. The killing of Zimri was a means of removing destruction upon the Jewish people. It was bringing peace back to the Jewish people. And therefore, Pinchas' act has to be seen not as an act, not merely as an act of zealousness, and therefore get the zealotry award, but rather it's the peace prize. It's the peace award, because the act is an act of bringing peace. Because when a person is acting zealously to against sinners who are bringing destruction upon the Jewish people, the zealotry of that person is actually taking away destruction from the Jewish people, spiritual destruction, and possibly physical destruction of the Jewish people because of their sins, and bringing them back to peace and tranquility. And therefore, the Bitzchak Salvatorich of Chaim's son added that Pinchas really teaches us a very important lesson. Very often, when we have situations where people are at odds. Now, just because you're at odds with someone, just because you disagree with someone, doesn't mean that there's any reason to have to now be zealous against the person or try to destroy the person. But there are times where you have situations where people claim that they're wearing the mantle of Torah, declaring they're wearing the mantle of orthodoxy, and in essence, they're really espousing philosophies and decisions that undermine the established Orthodox tradition. They compromise the tradition, they compromise the standards of halacha, and they say, no, you know, this is orthodoxy, this is Torah, we're doing Torah. And they call themselves as people doing Torah, they call themselves orthodoxy, but really what they're doing is they're undermining so many of the basic principles and compromising halachic standards that you can't just sit back and say, so the question is, people want to say, well, I can't just stand back there and just let it go. You know, you have to speak up against it. And other people might say, you know, Laman HaShalom, for the sake of peace, let's just get along. They'll do their thing, we'll do our thing, and for the sake of peace, let's not get into any kind of fight. Let's not speak out against them. And people think that any time you make peace, that you don't have quarrels, and you don't be at odds with a person, that's called peace. But what Pinchas told us was that no, that's not called peace. Because if what those people are doing are bringing destruction upon the Jewish people, they're destroying the Jewish people. They may look like the Jewish people are at peace, but they're not at peace. Because they're not at peace with Hashem, and their whole state of being, is a spiritual state of being, is being destroyed. And therefore, it is necessary to sometimes stand up and to go public and to be at odds with these people and to wage a battle against these people. Because that is the act of bringing peace back to the Jewish people. When you have those who are trying to destroy the Jewish people and bring destruction upon the Jewish people, you have to stand up and you have to be zealous. You can't be afraid and you can't be scared, and you have to be ready to stand up and be brave and courageous, even when people, as we see, are going to be against you and speak against you for doing it. You have to have that courage and that zealousness to stand up for the honor of Hashem and to save the Jewish people. That is what Pinchas taught us. You can do an act. You can do an act that seems to be an act where you're going against people. It's instead of an act of peace, it would be seen as an act of quarreling, as an act of violence against someone. Now Hashem said no. He gets the peace prize for it. Because that act is an act of bringing peace upon the Jewish people. Because when sinners are trying to destroy the Jewish people, when we get up and fight against them, that is what's bringing peace back to the Jewish people. Because they are now being saved spiritually, and they're back at peace with their Father in heaven. And therefore, not every time that a person goes ahead and stands up against people and seemingly is causing quarreling, should we go ahead and dismiss it and say, oh, he's just making a fight, let's just have peace, let's all get along. Can't do that all the time. At the same time, every time you have an argument with someone, you can't say, oh, you know, because I disagree with him, or he's not in agreement with me, so therefore, you know, I'm going to be zealous, I'm going to call him out, and I'm going to speak out against the person. Not every time that you have a disagreement with someone does that mean that you have to have a fight with the person. You know, there's different situations. Disagreement is a disagreement. Not every time because you disagree with someone does that mean that you have to consider that person as a sinner, bringing destruction upon the Jewish people. There was also a famous saying from Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, in which he said that when you are going to be a kanoi, when you're going to be a person who's a zealot, you have to be like the housewife and not like the cat. See, a housewife and a cat both have a common enemy. It's called a mouse. And both have a goal to get rid of the mouse. Okay? The housewife, though, she wants to get rid of the mouse and she does not want to see a mouse again. The cat, on the other hand, would love to see more mice, because he's having a blast chasing them and killing them. There are people who love a fight. They love it. They thrive on it. And they go and they say, they're going out there and they're fighting for the honor of Hashem. Sometimes they are. Sometimes doing it more than other times. But as much so being zealous has its place. It has its place. Sometimes it doesn't have its place. Sometimes it has its place because not everything deserves to be fought to be stood up against, to make a public outcry against it. And then there's also the idea that people shouldn't become zealous because they enjoy it. They enjoy a good fight. It makes them feel good. It makes them feel proud. It makes them feel, you know, uplifted. It makes them feel important. So Pinchas taught us there is a place for zealotry. There's a place to be zealous. There's a place to get up and to fight and to do battle with someone, unfortunately. But when you do the battle, the intention should be you want to do the battle and you don't want to have to do any more battles. That's what you want to keep battling because, you know, you like a good fight. And also, not every time that there's an issue does it mandate that you have to be zealous and to fight against it. But Pinchas taught us, though, that this idea, this across the board idea of Laman HaShalom, there just has to be peace. We have to just get along and not fight. No, that's the Pinchas taught us, that's not the way it always goes. You got to be careful with that. But there are times where we have to be zealous, we have to be brave, we have to be courageous, and we have to be willing to stand up against those who it doesn't look like they're bringing destruction upon the Jewish people, but they are. Because spiritually, they are doing that to them. Now, let's take a look at the first Rashi in the Parsha. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. So here the Torah is giving us Pinchas' entire lineage, and we know it already. And therefore Rashi is bothered by the fact as to why the Torah has to tell us his own lineage. And Rashi tells us, L'fishayu ha-shvatim mevazim ha-say. The tribes were disparaging him. Pinchas is Yichas. You know, his great-grandfather was Yisrael, right? Now, we know that Yisrael turned out to be a very fine person. But he didn't start out as a very fine person. We know that he was a tremendous idol worshiper. And the word pita means that he stuffed calves, he fattened them to sacrifice them to the idols. And therefore, you know, this is part of Pinchas' lineage. Yeah, we know that Yisrael was converted and he did tshuva, but you know, these kinds of things are still within the spiritual genome. And therefore, the act that Pinchas did, the Jewish people clearly did not consider his act to be considered a sincere act, Rather, they saw it as an act of, like an act of a wild man of sorts. And they said, you know where it comes from? You know where it comes from? It comes from his great, his great-grandfather, I think. Sure, he is, from his mother's side. Pinchas from his mother's side is a descendant of Yisrael. Because Elazar, just like Moshe Rabbeinu married a daughter of Yisrael, Elazar married a daughter of Yisrael. Oh. So actually, it's Avinu, right, his grandfather, his maternal grandfather, was Yisrael. So his maternal grandfather, Yisrael, that's not that far off. And therefore, you know what part of his lineage brought him to do this? His Yichus, his lineage, his genes, his spiritual genes from Yisrael. That brought him to do this act of killing a prince of the Jewish people. Because of that, therefore, what did the Torah do? Therefore the Pasuk comes and tells us the lineage of that follows Aaron. You know, his mother came from Yisrael, but his father, his grandfather, his paternal grandfather is Aaron. Therefore, because people were saying, look, what he did was an outcome of his lineage from Yisrael, who was at one time an idol worshiper, and it's that background that caused him to do this wild act, says the Torah, no, look at the lineage look at the other side of his lineage. Look at his paternal lineage, which is that of Aaron HaKohen, Aaron the High Priest. So the question is like this. You know, everybody knew his lineage. It's not like they didn't know. It's not like they only knew his maternal grandfather and his paternal grandfather. Right? People knew. So even though they knew that his paternal grandfather was from Aaron, people were still saying that, but look, what he did right now was not an Aaron-type act, it was a Yisrael-type act. So what is the Torah doing by saying to us, Yisrael, that Pinchas is the son of Elazar and Aaron and Aaron HaKohen? Everybody knew that. He was Aaron's grandson, but he's also Yisrael's grandson. And it's that lineage of Yisrael that's bringing him to do this. What is the Torah exactly trying to do when it's saying, look at the Yichus from Aaron? And the answer says, the Shari Ora is, that what the Torah is trying to do is trying to say, as we mentioned before, Aaron, we know, was Oyev Shalom V'Reidev Shalom. Aaron was known as the person who loved peace and pursued peace. Aaron was a peaceful person. You're saying that Pinchas' act of killing Zimri was the act of a wild man, and it comes from the genes that he got from Yisrael. The Torah is saying this act that Pinchas did, it's an Aaron act. It's not a Yisrael act. It's an Aaron act. It's an act of peace. And the way the Shari Ora brings it out is from a interesting halachic interpretation that comes from the Chassam Sefer on that Mishnah Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, "Heaven be tamidiv shal Aaron, be from the students of Aaron, Oyev Shalom v'Reidev Shalom, who loves peace and pursues peace. Rodev Shalom, he pursues peace." Which is explained to me that Aaron went out of his way to make peace. Okay? But if you take those words literally, and you want to play around a little bit with it, the word rodef also means a pursuer, which often has a connotation of someone who's trying to kill someone, trying to hurt someone. A rodef, in halachic terms, if you call someone a rodef, you're calling him a pursuer to hurt someone. And therefore, the Mishnah of us is saying that Aaron is a rodef shalom. He pursued peace, but if he needed to, he was raid of Shalom. If he had to, he would go out to destroy what may look like peace. If it meant, as we said before, what seems like peace on the outside, but is really not peace. It's really destruction for the Jewish people, and it brings separation and a lack of peace between the Jewish people and Hashem. And therefore, what the Torah is doing, says the Shari Ora, by mentioning Aaron's Yichus, is to say that when the Jewish people were saying that this act of Pinchas was a result of being a grandchild of Yisrael, being a grandchild of an idol worshiper, no, Pinchas is the son of Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Pinchas' act here is related to, it comes from his grandfather Aaron. It has nothing to do with being a wild man. It has nothing to do with being a murderer or being a bloodthirsty person. It has to do all with bringing peace to the Jewish people. Now the Shari Ora continues that we know, so basically the point here is to bring out that this act of Pinchas is an act that comes from his grant, from his yichas, from his lineage of Aaron, not his lineage of Yisrael. Now, going back to Parshas Vayechi, we know that when Yaakov went ahead and blessed Shimon and Levi, or he didn't really bless them, but rather he spoke about their future. And if you take a look, in Parshas Vayechi, going back to page 276, Pasuk Hey, Shimon and Levi Achim, Shimon and Levi are brothers, Klei Chametz Mechelei Seyem, their weapons are stolen items. B'seidam al tavoi nafshi, in their plans may my soul not come. B'kalam al teichat kevedi, and when they congregate, my honor should not join. So Rashi tells us, what is Yaakov Avinu referring to here when he talks about, in their plan, my soul should not come. When they congregate, my honor should not rest upon them. So on that, Rashi tells us, that what we're talking about here, the book of Rashi, Pasuk Vav, that's towards the bottom of the right column, the Seidon Al-Tavai Nafshi, my soul should not join their plan, Zeh Maise Zimri. This is referring to the act of Zimri, Zimri who Pinchas killed. Krishna is Kapsu Shifter Shal Shimon, Lahavi Samidyanus of Neymaisha, when the tribe of Shimon gathered together and they brought the Midianite woman before Moshe, V'amru Lo, Zuasura Oymuteres. This is what Zimri did. He brought the Midianite princess, brought to front Moshe, says to Moshe, is this woman permissible to marry or not? Imtei Ma'asura, and if you're going to tell me she's forbidden, Ba'as Yisra Mi Yitirimach, who allow you to marry a Midianite? This is what Zimri did. Okay? And we know that from last week's parsha, Moshe did not respond. One explanation Rashi is that Moshe did not respond to give Pinchas a chance actually to have his day. But this is what they did. It was their plan. In order to be able to somehow or another support what was going on and presumably to support his tribe, he basically openly challenged Moshe about marrying this woman, and he went ahead and he married her and he cohabited with her. So when this happens, Yaakov was saying, Al Yizachash Mi B'davar, my name shall not be mentioned at that point. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Zimri ben Salu Nasi Beisav Hashemayni, which is in our parsha, where the Torah tells us who the people were. It says, the Shem is Yisrael HaMukeh, the name of the Jewish man that was smitten, that was killed, Asher Hukas HaMidyanis, who was killed with the Midianite woman, Zimri ben Salu, Zimri the son of Salu, Nasi Beisav Hashemayni, the prince of the tribe of Shimon. That's it. We know he's Shimon. No mention of Yaakov. Why? Because Yaakov said, by this story, don't mention me. The pshat in that is, the explanation of that is, that Yaakov is trying to say, if my name is put onto this, then that means that this act, somehow or another, can be attributed back to me. And Yaakov says, no, it has nothing to do with me. It cannot be, it's not attributed to me, it has nothing to do with me. There is nothing that I have done, even in a smaller level, that could somehow or another pass on some kind of a bad gene that would later manifest itself in a different way. Nothing to do with me. Okay. It's interesting, the Shari Ara brings down that there's actually a Medrash, that the Medrash speaks to Zimri and says, Zimri from the tribe of Shimon, you know, your great-grandfather, Shimon, your grandfather Shimon, right? You know what he did? He fought against immorality. When his sister was violated, and the city of Shechem allowed his sister to be violated, what did he do, Shimon? He wiped up the city. And look what you're doing. And instead of following your grandfather, you're doing the opposite. You're promoting immorality. Okay? So if so, if the Medrash is really telling us that Zimri didn't follow Shimon, because Shimon fought against immorality and Zimri was supporting immorality, then maybe we should ask, maybe Shimon shouldn't be mentioned here either. Shimon shouldn't be mentioned either. Because it would seem like Shimon didn't do anything that somehow or another should lay some kind of foundation, plant some kind of a seed that would somehow or another, you know, manifest itself later in his descendant Zimri. So if we're not mentioning Yaakov because Yaakov is saying, I never planted any kind of seed, I did nothing to cause this down the line, so it would seem that Shimon didn't do anything either to cause this down the line. So why is Shimon mentioned? So the Shaila Arya answers in a very interesting way. His answer is that if we say that Shimon had some kind of part in what his grandson did, it's not the immorality part. It's a different part. It's the brazenness that Zimri had. And we find that to some level, Shimon exhibited that. And that's because Yaakov was not happy with what Shimon and Levi did. He was not happy. And although, according to many commentaries, the people of Shechem deserved to be killed for what they did, but Shimon and Levi should have asked Yaakov before they did it. Should have asked Yaakov. And they didn't do so. So we see that Shimon exhibited a certain degree of you know, if I want to do something, I'm going to do it. A certain degree of brazenness. That is what planted the seed for what his grandson would do later on. It's not the morality part, it's the brazenness part. It's the fact that Zimri went and he challenged Moshe. How come you can marry Midianite woman and I can't marry Midianite woman? And then he goes and everybody knows what he's doing. It's the brazenness of Zimri that we say it's the brazenness of Zimri that allows us to have Shimon's name here. And if we have Shimon's name there here, and therefore that means to say that Shimon played some kind of part, planted some kind of seed for the future of what his descendant would do, it was the brazenness part of what he did. Now one last thought from the Shaila Arya here, and that is that he's still bothered by the fact that he points out that the first Rashi we read, the thing Shahayu Hashvatim Avazim, I say, the tribes were disparaging him. Doesn't say the tribe of Shimon, who basically they killed his prince. Everybody was not happy here. Everybody was questioning Pinchas's act. And the question is, why? We know, Rashi tells us, in last week's Parsha, Pinchas saw what Zimri was doing. So Pinchas went to Moshe Rabbeinu and he said, you know, didn't you teach us that when a person does this, that a zealous person is allowed to kill that person for what they're doing? And Moshe basically said to them, okay, he brought it up, you finish the job. And that's when Pinchas went and did what he did. So Pinchas went, so he asked Moshe, and Moshe said, yeah. So what do the people want? What are they questioning about Pinchas exactly? And Moshe Rabbeinu told him to go do it. Moshe allowed him to do it. And he followed a halacha that they knew. People knew this halacha. So why were they being so disparaging of him when seemingly he's following what he was supposed to, he did what he was allowed to do? What are they so upset about? So the approach to explain this could be that clearly if you want to be a kanoi, you want to be a zealot, to the point that you're going to kill the person, you better be sincere. You better be sincere. Okay? And although it seems that Moshe Rabbeinu considered Pinchas sincere, maybe everybody else just, you know, they just couldn't accept it. Because don't forget, Pinchas at this point was a regular person. Pinchas, we don't find him holding any kind of position, even within the tribe of Levi. He wasn't the Kayin. We don't find him being anybody special. He wasn't one of the princes of the tribe. He wasn't even one of the spies. I mean, Shevet Levi didn't send a spy, but I'm just saying that, you know, you don't find him really holding any kind of position. So he's kind of your typical, you know, person. And now he went ahead and he became this big zealot and he killed the prince of the tribe of the Jewish people. So yeah, they know that Moshe Rabbeinu, that he asked Moshe and Moshe, you know, gave him the green light, but maybe the pshat is that they just couldn't handle it. They couldn't accept that Pinchas had risen to this level. The Shaila Arya says it in a little bit of a different way. And I think he's trying to give it a certain twist, a certain nuance, to be able to show how difficult it is to be this kind of kainoi, this kind of a zealot, and to kill someone sincerely. There's a famous medrash that when Avraham Avinu was taking Yitzchak to the Akedah, that the Satan, right, the angel that tries to make a sin, did his best to stop Avraham. The number of medrashim, what he did to stop. The final, I think it's one of the final things that he said to Avraham Avinu is, if you kill Yitzchak, they're going to call you a murderer. If you kill Yitzchak, they're going to say you're a murderer. And Avraham Avinu says, Afal pi kein. No, even so, I got to go do it. Now, what was the Satan saying, you're going to be a murderer? What do you mean? He was doing what Hashem wanted. People are going to say, no, he just did it on his own. That's what it means. So the Shari Eber brings down from Shach Zatzal an explanation that what the Satan was saying to Avraham Avinu was like this. He was saying, Avraham, the Rebbeinu Shalom has really given you a very difficult test. I mean, the Rebbeinu Shalom is really, you're in a catch-22. You know, if you don't do what Hashem wants, you're doing what's wrong. And if you do slaughter your son, you are putting yourself in a really difficult situation. Because the only way that you can slaughter your son and fulfill a mitzvah here and not be considered a murderer is if the entire time your intent is completely to do a mitzvah. If somehow or another, in some way or another, your intention somehow or another veers off, and instead of doing a mitzvah, you're just doing an act of murder, you're somehow or another, somehow in a even for a short period of time, you veer off from your intent to do a mitzvah, you will be a murderer. It doesn't make a difference that you're doing what Hashem wants, and maybe I started doing what Hashem wants. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if at the end of the day you're doing what Hashem wants. But if you're talking about this kind of an act of killing someone, if at some point at all your intention veers off from doing a mitzvah, you are a murderer. Now, the question is, this is my addition, wow, why else is Avraham Avinu going to do it? Is he going to start doing it because he's going to decide, oh, this is fun? What could be the possibility of him not intending to do a mitzvah? Excuse me. So I was thinking that perhaps in this context what it means is that clearly, you know, to do such an act, you know, you really got to find it within you to do this. I mean, this is clearly against Avraham Avinu's nature. And somehow or another, Avraham Avinu has got to find it within himself to bring himself to do this. It's almost like you've got to find some kind of a cruelty within yourself and bring it out so that you can get it done, because otherwise, how else are you going to get it done? But for that, the Satan says, yeah, but you know what? If at some point you're just doing it out of cruelty and not the intent of mitzvah at that point of time, then you're a murderer. You, Rebbeinu Shalom is putting you in a no-win situation. You are going to be called a murderer, or you have a very good chance of being called a murderer, because are you really sure that you'll never get, you'll never veer off your intent to do a mitzvah? To go in and do this act, you're going to have to do something to find that cruelty within yourself to kill him. And at any point that you're just acting cruelly, you're not doing it for the mitzvah. So you're a murderer. Avraham Avinu says, I got a mitzvah, I got to do what I got to do, and I'm going to do what I have to do. So the Shari Ayra suggests that what's happening here by Pinchas was the same thing. Yes, people knew that Pinchas was doing halachically what he could do, and people knew that he asked Moshe Rabbeinu if he could do it, but they weren't going to accept that the whole time it was all Hashem Shemayim, that the entire time from beginning to end he was just doing it for the sake of honoring of Hashem. Maybe he did it because, you know, look at this, that's much chutzpah. Can you imagine, like, going ahead in front of everybody and doing this? Guy's a jerk, you know, you get angry. And maybe at some point there was a certain, that he was doing it out of anger, not just to honor Hashem, but a certain anger. Maybe he's doing it to avenge his uncle's honor. They couldn't believe that the entire way, 100%, Pinchas is going to be doing it all just for honor of Hashem and not having some kind of a selfish motive. Some kind of a point where he's not doing it to honor Hashem. He's doing it out of anger.
Or it's a to self-aggrandizement because he said he was just an average guy.
Whatever it could be, whatever it could be, they couldn't believe that Pinchas was going to be pure from beginning to end. So yes, did he follow? Was he following halacha? Was following halacha? Did Moshe Rabbeinu say go ahead? Yes, but that he was going to hold out the whole way and be able, therefore, to be pure the entire, sincere the entire way, 100%. So that his act could be an act, not an act of murder, that they couldn't accept. And therefore, the Rebbeinu Shalom said, no, I'm giving him the covenant of peace. His act is not an act of anger, it's not an act of violence, it's not an act that he inherited from his grandfather, Yisrael, but rather it was an act of peace from Aaron, and it was all done purely for the sake of heaven. And therefore he gets the priest Yishalom.
What exactly is the definition of Kavoy and what is exact Halacha?
I'm sorry?
Well, there's the definition of Kavoy and what is the Halacha that allows such a person?
Well, a Kanoi means a person, we translate it as a zealot, right? That means a person who really gets upset about something. And he really gets stirred up.
But so this seems to be impulsive?
No.
Because
it's not, well,
he planned to go to Moshe and talk to
him. He was under control, right? He had the control, but it doesn't mean, though, that he's not bothered by it. You know, you can be very much bothered by something, but you still, you know, you still control yourself. So a person who is truly zealous to the honor of God, from the desecration that's coming to Hashem's name, from a person who is having male relations with an Aramis, with a non-Jewish woman, has the right to kill that person. Meaning the act of being intimate with a Gentile woman doesn't carry a death penalty. Doesn't carry capital punishment. But the zealot, right, but the act is an act that is a great desecration of Hashem's name. And for the person who feels that desecration properly, he has the right to stand up for the honor of Hashem.
Well, but isn't it a contradiction? If it's desecration of Hashem's name, that it should have been punished by law.
No, because there's no capital punishment for desecration of Hashem's name. Capital punishment is given for certain things.
Have no right to do it.
No, you have a right to do it if the desecration of Hashem bothers you that much. If you are truly hurt and bothered by that desecration, then you can stand up for the honor of Hashem. It's not I would say it's not a punishment for the act, but rather it's a way of standing up for the honor of God. And the only people who have a right to do that are the ones who really feel the desecration of Hashem.
Is halacha comes from the rabbis? Or
it's a Gemara. It's halacha meshem Sinai. Okay? Now again, nobody does that nowadays. We're not at that level. Okay. Now, I want to now share with you, again, another interesting lesson about being a kanoi, being a zealot. And according to many opinions, I'm not sure if everybody holds this way, but according to many opinions, Pinchas, right, was rewarded, covenant of peace, which the Sephornu says means that he, I think the Sephornu says peace means he never dies. Gemara says, Pinchas zu Elio. Elio Anovi and Pinchas are the same person. Okay. So there is a episode in Melachim Aleph. Melachim Aleph, where the Jewish people are being ruled by the king Achav and his queen Izebel. They were idol worshippers. They brought the Jewish people to idol worship. And we know there's the famous can't find the right word right now, but where on Har HaKarmel, there is this contest between Elio and the prophets of Baal to say, who's the true God? Is it Hashem, creator of the world, master of the universe, or is it Baal? And they basically, each one has to bring a sacrifice, and there has to be a response to the sacrifice. And if they are Baal, do their thing, nothing happens. Elio does his carbon, fire comes down from heaven, consumes the sacrifice, the Jewish people all praise Hashem, and they realize that they should not be worshipping Baal. Now, after that, Eliyahu actually commands that all the Nevi'i Baal should be killed. I mean, these were Jewish people. These were false prophets. And they should all be killed. And they all were killed. Now, all these false prophets were all Izebel's favorites. And when Izebel, who was worse than Ahav, found out what happened, she sent a message to Eliyahu that you're in big trouble. You're next. And Eliyahu had to run away. And eventually Eliyahu found himself at Har Elokim Chayrev, at Har Sinai. He had to hide in Har Sinai. So in Malachim Aleph, Parakit Tes, Pasuk Tes, Vayavai Shem Elam Ha'arav Vayavan Shem, Eliyahu came there to the cave and he slept there. V'nei Dvar Hashem Eilav. And behold, the word of Hashem came to him, Vayayim Eloi, and he said to him, Ma'alach Apar Eliyahu. Eliyahu, what are you doing here? Vayayimer. So Eliyahu responded, Kanoi Kinesi Vashem Elokei Tzvachis. I stood up for the honor. I was zealous for the honor of Hashem. Ki azvu b'rischa b'nei Yisrael. The Jewish people have forsaken your covenant. Es mizbechaisecha harasu. They have destroyed your altar. Vesneviyach hargu becharev. And your true prophets they killed by sword. V'yivasra ani levadi. I'm the only one left. V'yivachshu esnafshu lekachta. Now they're trying to catch me to kill me. To catch it. And they seek my soul to take it. So the voice that he heard, the word of Hashem that he heard, go out and stand on the mountain before Hashem. Behold, Hashem passed over. The ruach gedol of a chazek mafarek harim meshaber slam lefnei Hashem, and a big wind came and started smashing mountains and rocks, and it was making a whole scene. Loi v'ruach Hashem. And the word of Hashem, or this voice that he was hearing, said, Hashem is not in the wind. V'achar ruach rash. After the wind came this earthquake. Loi v'ruach Hashem. And the message was, Hashem is not in the earthquake. V'achar rash eish. And after the earthquake, excuse me. And after the earthquake was a large fire. Loi v'eish Hashem. Hashem is not in the fire. After the fire, kol demamadaka, there was a very faint voice, soft voice. Vayikashmer Eliyahu, when Eliyahu heard that voice, vayolat panav badarta, he covered his face with his cloak. Vayetzei, he went out, vayamat pesach ha'ma'ar, and he stood by the opening of the cave. Vinei elav kol, and behold, there's a voice speaking to him. Vayayim, and the voice said, Malach ha'par Eliyahu, Eliyahu, what are you doing here? Same question as before. Vayomer, Eliyahu said, Kanoi kinesi l'Hashem. I was zealous for the honor of Hashem. Elokei Tzvachos, the God of all hosts. Ki azvu es brischa b'nei Yisrael, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant. Es mizbechaisecha harasu, they destroyed your altar. Es neviyach hargu becharev, and your prophets they killed by sword. V'yivasra ani levadi, I alone have remained. V'yivachshu esnafshu lekachtan, they seek my soul to take it. Word for word. From the first time that he responded, Vayomer Hashem Eilav, Hashem said to him, Lech shuv v'dakecha midbar damasek, go out of the mountain, go, and you're going to anoint someone to be the king of Aram. You're going to anoint someone to be the king over Israel. This Elisha ben Shaphat, and Elisha ben Shaphat, you're going to anoint for a navi. Basically, Hashem is telling Eliyahu at this point, you will go and anoint Elisha as a prophet in your place. So after this episode, so Eliyahu is told he has to go out of the cave, and one of the things he has to do is he has to basically appoint his successor. So there's a medrash, Brother Yalkut Shemini, that says like this. And it's a fascinating medrash. Okay. So the Medrash is going on the words Malach HaPra Eliyo, first time. The voice says to Eliyo, what are you doing here? And we know what Eliyo's response was. Hoya lo sheyoyimar lefanav. The Medrash says, you know what Eliyo should have said, what am I doing here? He should have said, lefanav Rebbeinu Shel Olam, master of the universe, hein banecha b'nei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. Your children are the children of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. Who did your will, that they did your will in this world. Didn't say that. I was zealous for the honor of Hashem because the Jewish people have forsaken you. The first thing that Eliyahu should have said when he's saying, what are you doing here? Was not to say the Jewish people have sinned and I stood up for your honor and I have to run away from, and I have to run for my life. He should have advocated for the Jewish people. He should have said for the Jewish people, your children are the descendants of Yitzchak and Yaakov. Should have advocated for them. He should have asked for mercy for them. So what did Hashem do? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu started trying to change Eliyahu's perspective. Omar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Kashiradati li pein Torah Yisrael. When I brought the Torah down to the Jewish people, what was my entourage? My entourage were the angels that desired for the good of the Jewish people. Shenema, as it says, it says, "Amarat bahar v'achar harash eish himter loyshalo shoyis." My understanding of this part of the Medrash is that so what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a lot of noise. He made a tornado, and he made an earthquake, and he had a fire, right? He made all this big noise, but the message each time was, that's not where I am. I'm in the cold of Mamadaka. I'm in the soft place. When I came down, I gave the Torah. I came down with angels, not with destruction, angels of destruction. I came down with angels who wanted the good for the Jewish people. So, you know, he tried, gave this message to Eliyahu, and he gave Eliyahu time to think about it. And what happened? Adaya Nomad, B'dvar Ma'ar Yishayim, B'mar Kamei Kinesi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked him the second time, Malach HaPra Eliyahu, what are you doing here? Same story. Same thing. Which means he didn't get the message. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'esalisha Timshach L'Navi Tachtecha. Go and anoint Elisha in your place. So a friend brings down from, I believe it's from Yosef Meir Bloch, from the Talmud Rosh Yeshiva Tzatzal, that Eliyahu is Pinchas. The first time when Pinchas was zealous and he killed Zimri, he was zealous in the right way. When Eliyahu then went and killed the prophets of Baal, again, he was zealous. It was a proper zealousness. Third time, when he said, I was kind of kinesi, I was zealous for your honor, I stood up for your honor. The Medrash says that was what he was supposed to say then. There he was supposed to advocate for the Jewish people. Which means at that point, actually, his zealousness went beyond where it should have gone. And at this point, his zealousness was beyond where it was when he went over the line.
Well, he just explained what happened.
But he was supposed. But the problem is that in doing that, he was disparaging the Jewish people. What he should have been doing was somehow within all this, he should not. That's not the first thing he should have been doing. But again, he was doing it. What he was expressing was true. Kanei Shinesi. This is what I did here. I was being zealous for your honor. But at this point, the zealousness went over the line. Because that's not what his first response should have been. His first response should have been, your children are the descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. At this point, Pinchas' kanoyis, Eliyahu's kanoyis, his zealousness, went over the line. And because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, you're not going to continue. Elisha's going to now take over. So looking at this, you really see that being a kanoi, being zealous, right, it's a challenge. You have to know the proper time when you have to have the proper boundaries. It has to have the proper parameters. And even Pinchas himself eventually, according to this, went beyond what he should have done. And therefore, in some ways, it's easier to understand why the Jewish people were maybe a little bit questioning about Pinchas. You know, there's not a simple thing to do. To be a kanoi and to take the kanois to such a level and to make sure that you've got it right, we see at the end, it came to a point that Pinchas, Zu Elio, didn't get it right. And therefore it's understandable that maybe they challenged it. Rabbi Shalom testified, he's okay. But it's all part of this whole discussion how a person, you know, to go ahead and say, never be zealous, you know, let's just get along, not the right way to go. At the same time, when you are going to be a kanoi and you're going to be zealous, and you're going to get up, and you're going to be at odds with people, and you may go against people, you got to be careful. There are boundaries, there are confines. If you keep within those confines, you've done a great mitzvah. If you've gone beyond those confines, then it's trouble.